It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You need to be cautious with him. It's the same as always, but even heightened, he wouldn't play.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hi everybody, welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name's Sitch.
My name's James. That caught me very much by surprise.
Oh, well, you know, the thing is, we've done over 1,000 podcasts. The guy hits record on the camera. The guy hits record on the recorder thing.
So we're doing a shit intro. Yeah, okay. Thanks,
and off mate. We go. Off we go.
Talking of off we go, go on then.
57 points. How many did you get this week?
56. Well done. You beat me, as I told you last week.
I missed the deadline and I still got more points than you.
Yeah, but you only got one more rather than 37 more.
Indeed. The Thomas Socek captain fail. Of course, we're blaming whoever the ref was in that game. I don't even know which of the clown circus brigade it was.
I'd firstly blame Edson Alvarez for not turning up because the poor bloke had to play deep all game. So
yeah, I got a green arrow when I missed the deadline. So to be honest with you, I just can't complain. I've got to take it, right?
Can you clarify for the people that don't listen to us every week that your intention wasn't actually to captain
Thomas Socek? If you don't listen to us every week, you don't deserve to know. And why don't you listen to us every week? Because it's the greatest place to come for entertainment, not fantasy advice. Obviously, my plan was to sell Salah for Diogo Jota 2 weeks ago and ended up getting Thomas Socek as captain because I missed the deadline and ended up 57 points. So that's a 34 digger. I don't even know, 19 points, was it? I think it's a 34-point swing.
It's big enough, mate.
It's big, but what do we do? What do you do about it?
It's season changing though, isn't it, if you jump that?
And it's like, I was thinking about it, right? Like, so what's the points difference between us? 50 points, give or take. So that would have nearly clawed back 3/4 of it. But here's the thing, right? If I played the same lottery numbers every single week, and there's 1 week that I don't play them, and those six numbers win the jackpot, that's pain, right? Because if I had played my lottery numbers, I would have won something. I wasn't going to win FPL anyway. So the outcome at the end of the season is going to be no different or no worse.
No. I'm just saying you would have had a monster jump, wouldn't you?
Do you know, it's like I probably felt worse when I missed the deadline than when that had happened.
Because the
decision-making is the same, right? And here's the fickleness of FPL. What do you think my timeline on Twitter, not that I've, to be honest, particularly logged on in the last 24, 48 hours, really, not because I don't want to see what's in there, I just can't be bothered. What would it have been like if Socek had, scored 2 goals? What would I have been? Greatest FPL manager, whatever?
No, we just said you were shit lucky.
Lucky, right? And then what if I don't? It's the opposite. Well, which one of them is true? Neither, right? The reality is neither. So I can't take the credit. If Socek had done really well, I can't take the credit. If I missed the deadline and didn't play Jota, I'm not going to take the criticism. It's like one of them where neither are true and the latter doesn't matter. And if I had missed buying a lottery ticket, it would matter because I would be fucking £10 million poorer. But I still have a green arrow, so 717K. And based on the fact that, is it City Extra or whatever, tweeted yesterday, Haaland is back. Welcome back, Erling. I've got two free transfers this week to do what I want.
Be confirmed, I think, mate.
So the thing is, since then, as much as I missed the deadline, we know Salah's back with Liverpool. We don't know what's happening. Although Egypt did go through.
We'll talk about it.
No help from Nico's boys at Cape Verde, but congratulations to them. Topping the group, mate.
Yeah, mate.
Topping
Kudos
the
is
group.
Coming home.
Kudos is,
well,
yeah.
Not.
Yeah.
Unbelievably, they could still go through, technically. What? But it's very unlikely.
Is it lucky loser or something like that?
Well, the four best third place teams go through, don't they? And on 2 points, you really shouldn't be going through. But there is a combination of results where they could still go through.
Yeah.
Very unlikely, though.
Look, it was after Socek blanked, and obviously after the way the West Ham game ended, the last 2 or 3 minutes, it was inevitable. After having the kind of victory snatched away with that ridiculousness, it was inevitable that Jota was going to go off. So here's what it is. Own him in Sky, half my rank there in the game week. So you take
tomorrow's
the wins part with your losses. And this was a grey in the end, although could have been obviously massively better.
So how did your players do at the weekend?
Areola did really well until Ollie McBurney elbowed him in the face. I own Gabriel, Porro, Richarlison.
Well, he was on 3 points either way.
No, he was doing all right.
Okay.
Gabriel, Palmer, Richarlison, Porro. That's it.
Okay.
It's like one of them.
Half of them played the week before, but all right.
But like net to get to my 57, that was it. I only had Solanke, Socek, and Areola to go. So, you know.
Okay, 56.
Sorry, Gabriel.
For me, I'd obviously kept hold of Jared Bowen and started Jared Bowen, but didn't return me anything. I'd captain Saka this week. Game week somewhat saved, really, by Gabriel's 17-pointer. So across my three defenders, 28 points. And I know there'd be people out there with sort of 40s and more from their defenders this week. Cole Palmer's 10. That's essentially the lot of my week. So considering so many captains, Palmer, and he was an EO loser for me, Gabriel has completely saved the game week. Dropped for me from about 167K to 196. So, not terrible, not good. We'd move on to the next one. It's felt like the longest game week ever.
It's been a long game week.
The next one will feel like the shortest ever.
Yeah.
So.
When's the deadline, mate?
It's next Tuesday, Serge. Oh, okay. And that is at 6 p.m. 6 p.m. deadline next Tuesday, Serge. Yes.
Yeah, yes. Got it.
We will do podcasts next Tuesday. This will hopefully help you remember. I think the hot topic of conversation to cover off before we talk about games is obviously with Mo and this injury on Haaland. No, there's nothing definitive yet. We don't think he'll play at Tottenham on Friday as it stands. Still not full training, according to ITK, as far as it sounds at the moment. So, in the words of Sean Dyche, he would be touch and go for next Wednesday as it stands. Obviously, there's plenty of City information to learn on Friday, as there will be with other teams in FA Cup ties. So, Mo Salah, we know, injured. Went off injured in Egypt's second group game. As you said, they went through last night just by the skin of their teeth. And ironically, despite finishing second in the group, I now project them to probably get to the semi-finals when pre-tournament I projected them to get to the quarter-finals. It's just the way that it's opened up.
The draw that happens, yep, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. So there's been conflicting reports over the last few days. Is he going back to Liverpool? He was seen at the ground last night when obviously they played. So the understanding is he's either flown back to Liverpool last night or likely to do so today. The thinking behind that is obviously he'll get the highest quality of treatment from Liverpool and the best chance of recovering for Egypt primarily, if they do get to the latter stages of the tournament. there was some mention of, if Egypt got to the semi-finals, maybe he'd come back. Jurgen Klopp had said, if they get to the final, maybe he'd come back. What I would say is this, if Egypt gets to the semi-finals, whether Mo Salah is fit or not fit, he definitely not will not play for Liverpool in game week 24. If he's not played for Liverpool in game week 24 or for Egypt in AFCON, then he's obviously going to be a doubt for game week 25 unless we get something concrete in the build-up for that. We could be in the situation, which I joked might happen last week, that we get to game week 25. Liverpool could have a double if they deal with Fulham tomorrow night in the Carabao Cup, and we may not know if he's going to play or not. That's the circumstance that I can foresee right now, to be honest. Because there's some saying, I think his agent said last night as well, 3 to 4 weeks. Now, the date, Suj, is what today?
Today's the 23rd of January.
It's the 23rd of January. Well, Liverpool play at Brentford on the 17th of February. There's no guarantee he's going to make it.
There's too many games.
That's game with 25.
There's too many games and too much upside in between for me to hold Mo Salah. Now, the irony is I've missed Jota's big haul at the weekend. He's still probably the player I want to buy. I'm thinking now, like, where do I go? Jota is a perfectly capable, able replacement. Like, his points to minutes ratio is well up there. It just hasn't had the consistency of minutes. But after the performance last week, I don't see how he's going to get dropped. Liverpool could destroy Chelsea at home. I love the fact that it's a home fixture for them at Anfield as well, where they've been playing so well. I can't overlook the upside potential of a Jota or whoever your flavour is, if you want to go there, from Liverpool's attack versus holding Salah for 4 to 5 game weeks. I would love to engineer a situation where I can get Jota and KDB. And that would mean Diaby and Salah out for Jota and KDB. For me, that's just straightforward and easy.
What you got to think about there is, let's take the scenario that Egypt go out in the last 16 and Salah does recover in time for that game week 24 fixture against Burnley. And then we know Liverpool would maybe have a double in 25. Then what? That's what you got to think about, isn't it?
Personally, at the moment, as it stands, and my thinking could potentially change, I'm happy to swing against with a Jota. I'm not happy to go without and completely hide behind the sofa, but I'd be happy to swing against with another Liverpool attacker, because obviously City have their own double before that, and I don't want to miss out on that, and I still want to find a way.
Before, it'd probably be the same time,
wouldn't it?
The
same week. So I also want to make sure I've got money for Erling when he becomes available. And the likelihood of him becoming available before the double is probably higher than Salah becoming available.
The chances are Haaland's back before Salah. Let's put it that way at the moment.
That's my list of priorities. It's an out of sight, out of mind problem. Now, remember, I've still got Trippier and Trent sitting in my defence. So if I need to find money, there's money there.
You ain't going to get it. That's, I've said this to you before. If Liverpool did have the double in 25, you're not going to want to be in Trent, are you?
No. But again, Trippier might he's go still to Bayern flagged Munich and he wasn't in
week.
The squad at the weekend. So Trippier's going to be a potentially very easy move on. They really are getting the band back together, aren't they, at Bayern Munich?
Yep. How many losing Tottenham Champions League team can you get in the Bayern Munich team and then try and lose another Champions League, maybe? Interesting strategy. I don't know if Harry Kane's doing the transfers there now.
Which would he's be definitely doing the goals, James, smacking them in. So, yeah, I'm comfortable swinging against, but I also feel like it's so far away that there's so many things can happen in between. This is the problem with over-analysing strategy. Sometimes you miss the wood for the trees. You're so worried about the doubles and the blanks in the future. You miss what's right here up ahead of you that you can potentially capitalise on. So many other players now might be putting their hat in the ring. Like, what about Ivan Toney as someone that you potentially want to get for the double, right? I know one of the games is against City, but
yeah, once against Liverpool.
And it'd be very popular, though.
Of course you will, just by virtue of having a double. Yeah.
Exactly. So, but even a defensive, maybe, like a Ben Mee obviously scored at the weekend and is a threat from set pieces. I think the whole mood around
less interesting
Brentford have changed. I get it, but people will want doublers. People will want doublers.
Yeah, I'll repeat what I said on Wonder Pods last week, that even with the knowledge now that Brentford will definitely play in game week 29 and got the extra fixture in game week 25, I've looked at a projected difficulty schedule up to 29 with only 4 fixtures on there, so 8 teams playing. So there would be circa 10 teams or so that they've got two extra games over, and I would still have them third bottom on my fixture difficulty, even with two extra fixtures. It's a rough run they've got.
And the reality is, what's happening this weekend, James? FA Cup, fourth round. So, and obviously then next midweek, not next midweek, the Carabao Cup is this week.
That's this week, yeah.
So by the time we record on Monday next week, is what I mean to say, we'll know what's happening with the Carabao Cup final. We kind of know. And we'll know what's happening with the future potential quarters and semis for the FA Cup as well. And that may, again, have an influence on what we decide we want to do. Because say Liverpool go or City go out, good luck to you. Then that might change our perspective.
I think one of the things that would really change the narrative for people in their planning is obviously if Chelsea don't go through tonight. Because then you know that Chelsea-Tottenham game is on 26. So it becomes far more easier to manage 26 if you're carrying Gusto, Palmer, Porro, Richarlison, right? That's potentially going to be a problem if you want three Liverpool assets as well, and they all blank. So my opinion on it is always the same, that actually the more carnage, the better. Because if you're engaged enough, you'll manipulate the situation better than others who can't see the wood through the trees, if you will, and see the future. I don't know what I'm doing from a transfer perspective next week, and I don't suppose I will till probably Sunday night at the earliest. I think we think the FA Cup fifth round draw will be on Sunday. We think if that happens, then obviously we'll do another chip strategy podcast on Monday, as we did a couple of weeks ago, but obviously with far more updated and detailed information that can really help us with our strategy going forward. KDB's on agenda. I think this new Salah news, rather than the Jota Hall at the weekend, puts him very much on radar. It's not easy for me to get to Jota, though, ironically, because if I want to leave the money to go Alvarez to Haaland, I'd probably have to cut Saka to go Jota. I can't quite get from Bailey or Palmer to Jota. If I wanted to go KDB, Saka would have to be the sacrifice. Unless I don't leave the money for Haaland if he's not back, but I think my intention would be to leave myself a swift movement back to at least Erling Haaland. I've also got four flags defensively at the moment, so Trent we know is obviously a doubt, but sounds like it might be promising for next Wednesday against Liverpool. Gabriel went off with a knock against Palace after his haul at the weekend, but we think that's probably okay. Malo Gusto is not going to play for Chelsea tonight, but was not listed as one of Chelsea's injuries on their website yesterday, so I don't know if it's just a rest, but it's been said publicly that he won't play tonight. And Pau Torres is becoming a bit of a issue, to be honest. Like week on week, is he going to be back for Villa? Is he going to be back for Villa? Now, I'm not desperate to have him for next week, but there's a few games afterwards, such as Sheffield United away. Like, he could be very useful for me, say, when Arsenal and Liverpool play each other. So I might need to deal with a defensive issue. And if I go down that route, there's loads of different possibilities it could be. Kyle Walker would be one, even though it's a bit dull. But again, watching the Newcastle game back late last week, you see the advanced positions, actually, he and Josko Vardy are getting in again, emphasised, as I mentioned last Monday. The likes of Ben Mee wouldn't interest me.
Tino Livramento, like if Trippier was to go, dangerous. Would you want to go Livramento down Livramento?
If Trippier went, yeah. I haven't got Estupinan. Estupinan's the player that's hurt my rank the most this week. And it may even be that I'd go, particularly say if Chelsea did lose tonight, and I go, well, 26 is easier to manage. I might even go, right, actually, hang on here. We're going to go to like a 3.8 defender here and open up some more money possibly even. So, yeah, a number of different options for me at the moment. Not sure what I'm going to do at the moment. Captain.
And nor should you, really.
Nah, not really. I've said, like, don't overthink it at the moment. There'll be people going early and stuff, and if that's what you want to do, good luck to you. I certainly won't be. Captain next week?
Certainly from a bus point of view, it'll be Alvarez with Burnley at home, but then that's dependent on knowing that Erling Haaland won't be available.
Is that your only City player?
Yes. He's my only City player at the moment. I didn't gamble on Foden. I went with Richarlison, and obviously I didn't move Salah on and go to Foden, which last week proved okay. It might not in the future. If I buy KDB, it could be KDB as a potential consideration. So I'd say City top of the chop for my priorities, but I still think we can't overlook. I know that Chelsea are a difficult game, but Liverpool at home at Anfield, they could terrorise Chelsea potentially. So I wouldn't rule out a Liverpool asset as well. But I think I would default to a City asset, somewhere like Arsenal away at Forest off the back of a 5-0 win. But they've been doing a lot better under Nuno.
Saka's the one, and no one wants to do that again.
Yeah, so I think there are a few options, but I do think City's the place to go.
Yeah, it would be a City player for me. I'm near certain of that. But there's four candidates at the moment. Haaland would be one. Like you know, if it's looks very, very promising that he would start against Burnley, that's where the armband's going. I don't think that's going to be the case at the moment. I think for KDB to get the armband for me, I'll obviously be at the game Friday night, but I think I'd need to see him play probably at least 45, I think.
Yep.
And Foden and Alvarez are obviously two strong candidates there as well. So, I mean, I wouldn't even... as it stands right now, I've got it sat with it bust on Foden. But I'd probably, if Haaland was definitely out, I would maybe still just go Alvarez, yeah, because I think that's a hat-trick potential there, possibly.
Yep.
So it'll almost definitely be a City player for me, I think.
Let's talk about some of these games, shall we?
All right.
5-0, Arsenal, Crystal Palace. I think, obviously, Arsenal dominated and clearly deserved to win. Eze looked lively. I mean, he had a few shots on target. He seemed to be the one creative spark. But if you look at the last three goals, Trossard and the two Martinelli goals, it's like knife through butter stuff, where particularly the Martinelli goals at the end probably makes the scoreline look really bad. But all three of those goals was back to front in seconds, right? You're talking from defensive position to ball in the back of the net in 10 seconds. The Trossard one, even less. And that's they're almost like free goals, right? So you look at it and you think, okay, 5-0, three of them were scored in 30 seconds. 30 seconds of play from being in your own box. And that's what Arsenal can do. You probably end up a bit disappointed with Palace for not having a little bit more.
A bit disappointed. Be raging if I was a Palace fan.
Like, have a bit of streetwiseness or nous or whatever to not leave yourself so exposed. But it's just that good, right?
Yeah, they are just fair, that good. They're already 2-0 down at that stage.
They've got to chase the game.
The third goal comes from them taking the corner, and then this stuff on the fourth and the fifth goals, which are kind of amateurish, really, not helped by
it. It is 94th, 95th minute,
Mark
whatever
Gay
it is.
Had gone off. James Tompkins come on and looked like a fish out of water. Didn't look like he quite understood what was going on.
Professional job, and they did it.
Professional
Simple
job.
As that.
It's an interesting one. Obviously, we released COTC yesterday with Mark Southerns and Adam Pritchard discussing Forest and Arsenal. We spoke about the game a little bit. Arsenal had six shots on target, right? It wasn't a 5-0 game, and yet they were comfortably much, much better than Crystal Palace, who deserved absolutely nothing. But it was kind of
this
on...
This is where games take, kind of, right? Because they took the lead early. Had they not taken the lead early, it would have been a different game.
It was kind of on trend with a lot of Arsenal's season, being the better team, but never actually looking like they were going to go and win 5-0. Like 2 or 3-0 would have been about right in terms of a fair reflection from the game. Declan Rice, by the way, is one to monitor over the next week or so. Would obviously be a potential blow. He's a more likely absentee for Arsenal next week than Gabriel. And obviously, Arsenal don't play in the Cup at the weekend. But being as the game is Tuesday, we certainly will get press conferences. There's a few teams we won't get pressers on next week. I would suggest the four teams that are going to play on Thursday. So that's West Ham, Bournemouth, Wolves, Manchester United. We probably won't get press conferences ahead of the deadline. The good news with three of those teams is they do play in the Cup at the weekend. Your team does not.
No.
But at least we do know that Jared Bowen is back available.
Yes.
The headline from the weekend is Saka. And we did have a really good conversation. Quite a very unusual for COTC. We went into a deep conversation about one individual and his value as an FPL asset. And it's kind of a split opinion about whether just to keep him and sustain him. He obviously ticks over really well. He's brilliantly consistent, there's no doubt about it. But I don't know how often we'd want to go and captain him again. You don't need to at that value. But, as we'd mentioned, with the likes of De Bruyne, Haaland, Salah, etc., people are going to need to find money at some point. I don't suppose anybody's sitting there with money in the bank who can just go bang, bang, bang. Maybe they can. Good luck to you. I'd probably spend some of it at the moment, though. So, I mean, he's probably a sacrifice for me, but I'm very aware that I don't necessarily want him to be, because the run of fixtures up till game week 29 is extremely good. You know that he's going to play all the games. You know that he's on pens if he's not in a charitable mood. But yet, at the weekend, despite Arsenal winning 5-0, you never thought he was going to score.
Yeah.
If you watched the game. What I did notice was in the final 20 minutes or so, he was getting himself into really central areas. And I think he was quite keen to score. He was like, right, this game's won. My turn now. But he never really felt like it was going to come. And I do think with part of Arsenal's control and his own increase in terms of his own creative ability, there are games like this where he ends up wider and deeper than perhaps we would expect, I think. Salah, for example, as a comparison, it's a bit dodgy comparing the two. But Mo is always in dangerous positions. No matter how he's playing, and sometimes you do have games you think he's not on it, he's always getting himself into dangerous positions. Saka can have games, and has done over the last couple of months, where he doesn't. But as Mark pointed out on COTC, like, his expected goal involvement and his underlyings are actually not too bad. It doesn't look brilliant at the weekend. But different day, there's a hall here.
So though?
This is the thing. If you said to me prior to the game, right, Arsenal win 5-0, he'd have been everyone's captain.
Correct.
Right. He's had an assist technically for Gabriel, who doesn't score. Great goalkeeping by Dean Henderson, by the way. And you would just assume that in a 5-0 victory, there'd be something for him. But also, they beat Sheffield United 5-0 earlier in the season. And all he got that day was an assist.
Yep.
And that was quite a fortuitous assist. And I want to say I captained him that day as well. So it's twice now I've captained him in 2 5-0s, and he's only provided an assist across the two. So I think it probably depends on your persuasion. Obviously, if you can hold through, it's ideal. But a longer conversation is going to be over the likes of him, Watkins, Solanke's, do these kind of template-ish players at the moment, do they need to be moved on to find money? For me, he's going to be the easiest one to move on, I think. But I also don't particularly want to.
It's only 2 returns in the last 7 or 8 games. That's the thing. It's like, over what time period are you looking at this kind of goal involvement? When was Mark looking? Last 5 games? 10 games?
No, he was looking
at the whole season.
Because he had that.
Yeah, but for how long? The last 5 games? 10 games?
Periods. I think he was looking at last 6.
Okay.
He had before that a period of sort of 4 or 5 games where his expected goal, his XG over the 5 games was like comfortably less than 1. Was bad. It has picked up again a little bit, but then if you refer specifically just to XG on Saturday, it's 0.1. Shy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Never looked like he was going to score in the game. Positive result for Arsenal, though, considering the results they'd obviously had previously. I think Palace, in hindsight, was an absolutely ideal opponent. I think this Roy Hodgson stuff's going to come to a head very, very quickly. Their next game, so just Sheffield United at home next week. And it will be pretty restless at Selhurst Park if they don't win that. Most of us would have seen the banners in the away end towards the end of the game. I think as a football club, they're just not inspiring belief for their fan base at the moment. And have got every right to be asking for a little bit more from their football club. Essentially, unless Eze and Elise are both available, because I think one needs the other and vice versa, it just looked like an average football team. For me, Sam Johnstone is the better of the two goalkeepers, and he'd be better off with him in goal. I think they need a midfield player this month. I think they need another attacking player, but I think they're just bumbling along with Hodgson. I'm not convinced that they will change anything. And I think,
gets in the season.
To be honest, if you probably said to Palace board at the moment, you'll finish 17th at the end of this season, they'd probably just go, yeah, all right, cool.
Brentford 3, Nottingham Forest 2. Obviously, the game was heavily focused around Ivan Toney's return and what he was going to...
I didn't know there were 21 other players playing, did you?
All the build-up, armband on him, and he did what he did with scoring the goal from the free kick, which has been discussed to a death on whether or not it was cheating or not.
Give your opinion.
Not.
I'm bored of it.
It's cheating... But I also don't think it's his responsibility. Do you know what I mean? I think it's on the borderline where it's the ref's responsibility or other players' responsibility to manage the game.
Do you think you should get suspended for it? Wow, you're actually thinking about that.
I'm just interested in, does it then open up a can of worms? Like, what does it mean for everything else? Yeah, like, if you suspend him for it...
What does it mean when someone gains 10 yards on a throw-in?
Completely, right? I saw it in our game. The day after, where
which happens, on nearly every throw,
trying to take throw-ins in different places and stuff, just a little bit more heightened awareness of people doing it, right? Because of what happened with Ivan Toney, I don't think you can punish him because it opens up the most ridiculous can of worms for
course
everything.
Of course, you can't punish him.
And
has
I think
has he cheated? Yeah, move on.
It doesn't, like, for me, it's not the type of thing I feel comfortable doing. Like, if I was playing a game of football, but maybe that's says more about me than it does. Like, other people are comfortable bending the rules to the extent of wherever they can get to. If you put, if a ball's put down for a free kick, I'll take it from where it's taken. That's just my nature. But look, the guy wants to score a goal. Guy wants to win a game of football, and that's his attitude.
It was the fact he moved the spray as well, wasn't
that
it? Really,
it looked particularly bad. Because then you are consciously, knowingly. Like, you're not just trying to nick a few yards, you're acting.
As I said on COTC yesterday, someone in that wall must have seen that he moved the ball.
Responsibility sits with the ref and the other players to police it. Like, it's not his responsibility.
Also, the referee, in fairness, got his back to it, and he's marking the wall back, right?
Mm.
But linesman's that side of the pitch as well. See it, right? What's the linesman looking at that point?
Couldn't tell you, James.
So someone should spot it. But
do you think VAR should have intervened?
VAR can't intervene on that by their own terminology and laws and rules. I think it's similar to if a corner was taken slightly outside the quadrant, which I'm sure happens on occasions, VAR won't get involved. So it's kind of the same as that, right? But someone from Forest's perspective must have seen that he moved the ball. Because even when you were looking at it live, you thought, I think you can put that near post. Mm. And obviously, we never saw that. I'm pretty sure we never saw him move it till they showed the replays afterwards. So it's gamesmanship, right? It's people cheating every football match you watch, basically. His return is obviously a major boost to them. I thought, in terms of his performance, lackluster would be a completely unfair word to use. He looked like to me like he was managing himself. I think the first 10, 15 minutes, particularly, he looked short. He looked short of fitness massively, which hasn't played football for 9 months. In terms of, you know, being injury-free, training, all that, you hear managers talk about it all the time, match fitness. He's like a different level. Look at all those players who came in for Tottenham when Tottenham had injuries, and you're going, well, they ain't injured. Yeah, but they ain't played football themselves for 2-3 months. You need kind of like Bentancur. Bentancur looked shot the first couple, yeah, right? Yeah. Then suddenly got into his groove again. And I think there was a bit of that for Tony where he grew into the game. The longer it went on, his creativity was kind of on show. He created a brilliant chance for Keane Lewis Potter, but he himself, in open play opportunities, didn't particularly look like he was going to score.
Did he only have one shot on target? I feel like that was the free kick.
That's probably correct. Yeah.
I was looking for my shot here.
He played fine for first game back. I think it's worth saying. I think Forest were pretty unfortunate in terms of the result. I don't know much to talk about them. He's off the pitch as we did last week, but. They were missing some key players. I don't think it got noticed
They've
as much
got a
the
lot
weekend.
At AFCON.
So, yeah, but obviously Gibbs White and Alanga didn't play at the weekend either. In terms of AFCON, Ivory Coast are on the borderline now because they lost unbelievably 4-0 at home to Equatorial Guinea yesterday. So they're on the brink of whether they're going to go through or not. If they come back, it's Willy Bolly and Sangare. Yep. They get back, which would help because they are going to look short of bodies going into that game against Arsenal next week. Nuno Tavares, don't go searching for him on Twitter. Obviously, can't play. He'll be ineligible because obviously it's against his parent club. Harry Toffolo will cover at left back. That's fine, but they need some of them offensive players and centre backs back. So I mean, Gibbs White and Alanga being back would be a huge boost for them. And they played all right. I think, to be honest, I think a draw probably would have been a fair result. To be honest. Brilliant finish from Neil Maupay. I thought it was handball when I saw it live the first time, when he was running away, I thought, "Don't celebrate, mate." I'm not sure that might have hit your arm. You're not going to kid anyone if it has. It didn't, and he took the goal really, really well. I think there's a temptation to keep looking at him because of the double in 25, and that's a moneymaker, right? Yep. Suddenly you go Watkins. Oh, I can have Watkins to Maupay. Maupay in a double, and that might be your difference to get Saka back to Salah, for example, in a few weeks' time. But obviously, remember that Vissa's obviously at AFCON. And although it's very unlikely, obviously, Bumo's kind of projected for sort of March, sort of about game week 27. But I always remember that what I'd said when Bumo got injured was it reminded me of when Bentancur were injured. And we saw Bentancur come back a month earlier than expected. So I probably wouldn't be diving into that one. Keane Lewis Potter is another enabling one that people might be looking at. He's kind of playing this hybrid sort of left wing back slash left wing position at the moment. He had a few opportunities at the weekend. He never struck any confidence or conviction that he would take those moments. And I also don't think it's a given that he'll stay in the team, particularly as Brentford have obviously signed Sergio Reguilón on loan from Tottenham. Now, Reguilón can't play in the next game week because obviously he also will be ineligible to face his parent club. I've seen a few mention him as a potential one. I think it's 4.4, Serge, to go to.
Well, he was when he moved.
To go to for the double. But I just look at them fixtures that I've had. Having Tony for that run of fixtures is one thing. Having a Reguilón for that run of fixtures.
Yeah.
They're not inspiring confidence at all defensively that they're going to keep clean sheets either. I think Collins is playing with fragile confidence at the moment. I think Ethan Pinnock is a defender I really like, but the last couple of times I've watched him, I haven't been hugely impressed, actually. Since he was outstanding against Arsenal in sort of the November period, last couple of times I've watched him, I haven't been too impressed with him. So I think they've got issues defensively. The fullbacks have obviously been a well-documented big miss. Reguilón coming in is going to help that. I think, as I said a couple of weeks ago, I think they're going to play a back three in the majority of the games now, because they won't want to play with the likes of Reguilón or Roslev as fullbacks when they'll really look a little bit brittle defensively. It's worth saying Christian Norgaard certainly helps them in terms of their structure, and he was a miss for them at the weekend as well. I think a draw probably would have been a fair result. Can't see me really looking at Brentford bar Tony, but it won't be now anyway.
No. Let's move to Sunday, James. Sheffield United 2 or West Ham United 2. It was a mess of a game.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Absolute mess of a game that got entertaining as it went on, but not for quality of football, more for entertainment more than anything else. I think, to be honest, the result was a fair result in the end. I think Sheffield United showed, particularly in the first half.
Sheffield United
did not
deserve to lose a game.
Yeah, I can't say that they deserved to lose, but also they did because net-net, both penalties.
Let's put it a different way and say you didn't deserve to win.
Agreed. I was ready with robbery, like as a tweet to put out there, right? Because if we'd have won that 2-1...
Robbery away to Sheffield United.
It would have been a robbery. But you've got to look at, like, obviously some really core players. We're missing a lot of the spine in Agued, Alvarez, Paqueta, Kudus. You're talking about the middle of the pitch, and you've got players coming in that the main thing with the likes of Fornals, Cornet, and these guys that come in, they just don't look like you mentioned it with match fitness. They don't look like they've played real football for so long, and nor have they, right? I love the commentary on Danny Ings. He's not scored in 19 games for West Ham this season. It's like, if you total up his total minutes that he's played for West Ham, the boy hasn't played 19 games. He's come
probably
on a sub.
Maybe 4 or 5.
Max. Yeah. So it's just misleading. Misleading.
He played really well, by the way.
He did have a good game. Yeah. But I think Sheffield United were better. And I think if you're a Sheffield United fan, you'd feel heartened that there's something there that Chris Wilder is trying to put together. The young lad, is it Brooks? No.
Yeah, Andre Brooks was a good player.
Was really good. Yeah. I thought Diaz was okay and provided some movement. And they're obviously a very big physical team. They did pretty well. I think West Ham were very disjointed and there was no fluidity to it. Sat in deep at the start of the first half. The game kind of changed when Ben Johnson came on. And I don't really know what position he came on as.
I can tell you.
He just was floating around. He was much more dynamic. He provided some energy, provided some legs, provided some creativity, which is just not what you expect from your number two. But number two on the back of his shirt, as opposed to anything else.
As opposed to being Fabianski.
Fabianski. Yeah. But and then in the end, obviously, what the ref's doing in the last 5-10 minutes, completely lost. Like with Brewster's 2 feet off the ground.
Red card, yeah.
And you're like, what have you called the yellow for? Is it because you're bottling giving decisions?
No, do you know what? I get that.
The pace. The pace he went in?
When you see that once, look, my instinct was, when I saw it live the first time, I thought red card, because it felt overly excessive in terms of the speed of which he came into the challenge. But you get one look at it, right? The fact that he's dished out a yellow there, I think we can understand. I wouldn't say it was a... like a definitive, it has to be a red card on every single occasion. But I would certainly say, yeah, I think that's a red card. I think the upgrading of the decision by VAR is correct.
Yep.
I certainly would have given it as a red card. But I understand.
Look at it. They didn't upgrade it themselves.
I understand.
But they wouldn't. They'd say, go and have a look.
The other thing is probably a wider conversation for a different day. But with a challenge like that, if he gives the red, and it's maybe not quite a red, then VAR won't overturn it because of the speed he's come in.
Yep.
So if he's in doubt, he's actually better off going yellow first and then they go, actually, this should be a red. It's the better way to do it rather than, it's a red and, maybe it's not quite that bad. What's the better? It's probably that he goes on the cautious side first, isn't it?
I agree, except though then now they're not making the decision that they might think. It's taking the power away from the refs because they're playing the percentages and playing the odds rather than reffing the game.
I'm not going to defend him on the two decisions afterwards, though.
Yeah, I'm still confused about how Ollie McBurney elbows the keeper in the face and wins a penalty.
I don't know why this hasn't been... It was lots of people just going, yeah, it's a penalty.
And was it Robinson on...
Am I watching a different game? It's not a penalty.
And was it Robinson on Bowen? I don't remember. Was it...
I think so. Or Armie Hodzic, maybe. I can't remember now.
Either way... The defender's got his back to where the ball's coming from and arms round the player.
But it was handball, Suj. It was handball.
Unbelievable.
The Bowen one I can get a little bit because maybe out of shot we might not have seen that Bowen's pulled him towards him because why is he facing that way? I don't know. But certainly I would have said, yeah, that looks a penalty. But the Sheffield United penalty is never a penalty.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But look, you know what? What are we going to do? Like, this is the game, right? We talk about it week in, week out. Every weekend, there is going to be a fixture that is affected by this way. This week, it happened to be ours. Next week, it could be yours. And the week after, it could be someone else's. It's unfortunate. These decisions end up costing clubs a lot. If it's the difference between 6th and 7th or 5th and 6th at the end of the season, it's the difference between Europa or Conference League. And that's now the difference of tens and 20 millions worth of pounds in terms of sponsorship and advertising and TV. They're big decisions, and that's why people get particularly upset about them. On the balance of the day, the result was a fair result, but I would say only 8 out of 10 football matches end the way that they probably should. So you take it as it is. I think let's talk about FPL. Like, I'm not interested in anybody from Sheffield United, if I'm honest with you, but for West Ham, if you've held Bowen without his mates is just not the same. It's just not the same. But I do think there could be some interesting things. You've got to keep an eye on West Ham in the transfer market, right? The Calvin Phillips link, I think, is big. Because one thing Calvin Phillips does have is great distribution, right? He'll be able to play the balls that Paqueta sometimes plays through. I think Calvin Phillips has the distribution to be able to find the ball in behind to Bowen or the ball out wide to find space. So at the moment, I don't own Bowen, and I've got no rush to want to go anywhere near getting him back, or any other West Ham player for that matter. If Calvin Phillips comes in and if we hear news about Paqueta potentially being fit or Kudus is back, that may change. But I'm not in a rush to potentially go there.
I want to cover just a little bit on Sheffield United first, otherwise we'll miss it. Obviously, George Baldock wasn't in the squad at the weekend. I'm not quite sure the reasoning why. I presume there's obviously some form of injury, but he'll be one knocking about in a few teams worth keeping an eye on. Ben Brereton-Diaz obviously scored on his debut. And he is priced in as a midfielder, 5.0. And there's been a lot of questions as to why. And well, part of that is due to his positioning for Blackburn last season. And judging by his positioning on Sunday, that's the right call as well.
It's wide left.
He played wide left, basically, yeah. So you wouldn't treat him from that perspective any different to a Son or a Salah, basically. So were he to have a spell through the middle, I think just by virtue of that, he would be one to keep an eye on.
Five million is a good price.
Of course it is.
Good price for him.
And I would probably expect that between now and the end of the season, he'll probably be their top scorer. But that might only be 4 goals or something like that.
Well,
but
this is the thing, right? They talked about it in commentary. Prior to the goal against us, he hadn't scored since last May in the league. And that's including his spells at Valencia or wherever.
Villarreal. He'd not had a good spell there.
Yeah. So one goal doesn't suddenly mean that he's back in form, keep an eye on it.
He took his goal really well. Obviously, the one-on-one chance in the second half is bad, and he never looked like he was going to score.
Nah.
But the flip of that is as well, the run is outstanding. in terms of to be able to kind of that old Lundberg run left to central, see it come in and time it perfectly and get himself away. That's a different set of armoury that Sheffield United can have. Archer obviously didn't start either. Schüler had been given the favouritism over him. So I think we're probably at a stage now where it's messy enough for Archer that he probably wouldn't be a go-to in terms of if you want an enabling forward. And those who own probably aren't starting him often, but need to keep a watchful eye on this as we're coming towards a period of doubles. And for someone like him, more importantly, blanks. For yourself, Serge, I think the biggest miss is Paqueta.
Well,
rather than Kudos.
Fans would argue that it's Alvarez, actually, as a holding midfielder. But I know where you're coming from.
On Sunday, specifically, I don't disagree with that, which we'll come back on to. But in terms of, from the FPL perspective, I think Paqueta is the bigger miss for Kudos and Bowen, because he's the X factor of creativity that you were just talking about.
Yeah, we need someone else that can play a ball through.
In terms of Sunday specifically, yes, I agree with you, because you changed system. You played a 4-2-3-1. Danny Ings played as a 10. Jared Bowen played on the right. You started with Cornet on the right and Fornals on the left, which lasted about 20 minutes, and David Moyes swapped them two over. Cornet underwhelmed, despite his goal, underwhelmed massively for me.
I do think that he's still a talent and a player. But there's no doubt about it, but he's just not got match fitness or football in his legs.
What it meant with you changing the system to the two in midfield of just Socek and Ward-Prowse, getting overrun in there, mate. Getting overrun. And ironically, it was when Johnson came on and played in midfield and you went to a three that you looked better. Ironically. I couldn't get Joel Linton out of my head watching him now. It reminded me of when Joel Linton first went into midfield for Newcastle. I'm not comparing longer term here. I was like, this is awkward. And then suddenly it came for him and he looked like an absolute beast and a monster. The reality is, he came on and changed the game for you, mate. He really did.
It was one of those where it was just confusing to watch. You know, like sometimes you just laugh when you
could hear the ironic kind of cheering in the away end.
Just like,
stuff.
This is amusing. Yeah, for him and for Danny Ings, who ended up having a good and better game as well, because they have been much derided. And look, he's been all right the last few times Ben Johnson has come on and had to do a job. He had to play the other game right back when Sofa was out. He's going to have to play now because Sofa has got himself a one-game suspension. Let's see. It's a watching brief with West Ham at the moment.
Yes, we will not be seeing that experiment again when you play Bournemouth.
Probably not.
No.
Let's talk about Bournemouth. Bournemouth 0, Liverpool 4. 4 off an XG of 1.5. So,
The first half was, I can't remember, shot in the first half from either team, to be honest, really.
I can tell you, Liverpool had 4 shots, Bournemouth had 3 in the first half. Liverpool had 2 on target, Bournemouth had 1.
I can barely remember them.
But, so those 6-7 shots that I mentioned, James, Liverpool's combined XG for those 4 shots they had.
At 0.1.
0.09. And Bournemouth was 0.13. So yeah, the XG in the first half was nothing.
Yeah, I think they were long distance, shots from distance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Really good result for Liverpool. It was a bit of a debate on our Slack community about whether this was a statement win or not. I kind of sit in the middle of that because I think at the end of the day, Bournemouth are still a bottom half side who Liverpool, irrespective of absentees, would expect with the form they're in to go to these places and win. And Bournemouth obviously had their own absentees as well. I think particularly Marcus Senna's side, the longer the game went on, was obviously suspended, missed the game at centre-back. They've ended the game with basically only one of their first-choice defence on the pitch in Ilya Zabani, because Adam Smith had been out, Max Aarons went off injured, Milos Kerkez has obviously been injured the last few games as well. So they had their own absentees as well and didn't create enough. But kind of a little bit similar to the Arsenal game, wasn't a 4-0. Liverpool were ruthless in their finishing, which includes finishing from Darwin Nunez in the second half and Jota, who can even afford one miss kick before finishing his second chance. Good result, I think, particularly because Szoboszlai wasn't back fit. So it's all of Liverpool's, essentially, their right side build-up gone. It would be akin to, if I think of Tottenham at the moment, playing without Porro, Saar and Kulusevski, I'd be like, oh my God, we're in massive trouble. Now, the three Liverpool are stronger than that Tottenham three. So put that into context. But like the young boy Bradley at right back did really well. He started with Luis Diaz on the right and changed that all up in the second half, and they were better for that, I think. Jota, from a fantasy perspective, is the outstanding one, I think, to go for in the immediate, because he's just the one that you feel like, if he gets the minutes, he will get the returns. And while Salah's not here, there's not much question on the minutes in the very, very short term.
Agreed.
That doesn't mean he's a guaranteed starter at all. And similar applies for Nunes, because it's easy at moments like this we can forget Cody Gakpo, for example. We've seen Klopp play Elliot on the right of a front three, for example. So there's no guarantee on the minutes, and it's partway again, I'd want to wait beyond Sunday before I made a move. So if Jota did start tomorrow night, started Sunday against Norwich, and then I'm looking at the games beyond, not to say that I wouldn't think he'd start against Chelsea, but I'd be conscious that the game's coming up, even if it was for after, I think it might be a rest against Burnley, for example, even that far in advance. So I'd have an awareness of that sort of thing. But yeah, he's the one more on radar. But then there'll be other people who are looking at a forward at the moment, thinking, well, it's Darwin Núñez. And there'll be plenty of held on to Núñez because we've just had too many other fires to deal with, and you've got your reward now.
I'm obviously Liverpool, we know with their rotation, it's based on the traffic light system. I feel like based on form, Jota's kind of making himself undroppable, and I don't think Klopp would maybe want to take him out while he's in this form. And he's had such a patchy run with injuries in and out the team that I think just a consistent run will help him build up his strength a little bit.
You say that, but then obviously Salah's injured at the moment, but basically Mo doesn't get injured, does he really?
No.
So it's an unusual one, whereas with Jota...
Jota might play up front sometimes.
...does have niggles and stuff like that. So I think, like, if there was to be word to say you need to be cautious with him, it's the same as always, but even heightened, he wouldn't play.
Yeah, agreed. If he's red or amber on the traffic lights.
But yeah, he's the one on radar. It would certainly be him over Diaz for me,
just
for
on
example.
Jota, though, you could imagine him coming off the bench and doing damage, though, which he's done so many times as well. That's the other thing with him. He's... high probability that he could come on and do damage.
His returns per minute are staggering.
Ridiculously good. Yeah. That's why, and I've owned him so, he's always served me well when I've owned him. There's certain assets that have always done well for me when I've owned him. Kulusevski is another one where when I've generally owned him, he's actually done all right. So you feel biased towards going back to your tried and trusted safety blankets, don't you?
Also, Trent being back is another creative potential in terms of Liverpool creating chances for the likes of Jota and Núñez. And Andy Robertson's now not far away either. Chelsea might come a little bit soon, and maybe Arsenal might as well, but he's really close now, Andy Robertson. And I think there's every chance probably Trent probably will play against Chelsea. That was, when he got the injury, that was what they were all saying, was Chelsea going to be the target. And I think with the two, he obviously won't play tomorrow night. He won't play against Norwich on Sunday, you wouldn't think. Might be a substitute, maybe. That green light would be useful, but I think... for most people now, the advice would be, unless we get definitive news otherwise, start Trent.
Agreed.
Which I did this week anyway, just in case, as I did with Bowen. When we got to the deadline, we thought, well, Bowen's out, is how it looks, right? So, in hindsight, I wish I had. I'd have an extra bloody point now, ironically. No, I think for most people that play Trent, Trent and Robertson coming back will be a bonus to Liverpool creatively as well.
I just think now, psychologically as well, more than halfway through the season, they can smell the title, right? 5 points clear of Arsenal, 5 clear of City, but City have the game in hand. But you can, it's a race now, and they're very, very ruthless when they need to get over the line.
If Liverpool win the next two, which is Chelsea at home, which, whatever you think about them, is still a challenging game, and then Arsenal away. If they win at Arsenal as well, then the belief will soar through them.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, really will.
And then they can be really ruthless front runners. Thoughts on Solanke? Because he's the one with high ownership in Bournemouth's team.
Yeah, quiet day. I mean, look, to be honest, Liverpool have been the best defensive team in the league this season, so I don't think we should be hugely surprised about it. And it is interesting how quickly the narrative changed from many people's belief of, you can't leave him out at Tottenham. Well, that was only the one game week before, actually. I don't know if the fact that he had an injury knock that kept him out the FA Cup game put a bit of doubt into people's minds. But, okay, he's blanked against Liverpool. If Alvarez isn't back for West Ham, I'd fancy him probably to return against you. I think Solanke versus Palmer might be a deliberation that a lot of people are going into the next game week thinking about which one
to
start.
To play, yeah.
Which one for you?
Palmer.
Really? Even though Solanke's against you?
Yeah, probably Palmer.
No, I wouldn't want to leave Solanke out against you, especially if Alvarez wasn't back.
It's at our place, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm. If Alvarez isn't back, that's a very different proposition. But I think he was close. I think he failed a fitness test on the day, so yeah. I'd suspect that he would be back. Now, I think, to be fair, I'd probably play Solanke.
Both on pens, right?
But it's yeah.
And we do know that Bournemouth have had one now this season, so who knows? There might even be more. They might come along like buses, although it doesn't feel like it at the moment. I think with Solanke, look, there might be some information to learn this week in terms of the results. Bournemouth's game's on Thursday night, by the way, against Swansea. But what would be more interesting is, from a Bournemouth perspective, let's just say, unlikely, but let's say Liverpool lost to Norwich in the cup. Let's say Klopp rocks up Sunday and he goes, well, you know, it's going to be Chelsea Wednesday. I'm going to play a really rotated team. And you just get this mad one where Norwich knock them out. Then knowing that Liverpool wouldn't double in 25, I think would increase the probability of suddenly the Bournemouth-Luton game getting arranged, right? That's not to say one directly impacts the other, but I think if Liverpool haven't got the game to rearrange with Luton, it adds to the potential of Bournemouth-Luton getting rearranged at some point. So just bear that in mind. And Bournemouth-Luton is still absolutely random in terms of where it can go. I think a little bit like with Tony, their fixtures aren't brilliant. But imagine moving from Solanke to Tony just to find out Solanke ends up with a double anyway. I'd want to be waiting on that sort of move at the moment to get a bit more info personally. So I think it'd be sticking for me for the minute. I could go like Solanke to Haaland rather than Alvarez to Haaland. Then I'm blocked off of every other Manchester City player. And I just think that would then become a nagging problem with Alvarez if Haaland's back. Therefore, Solanke as a consistent beast is liable to stay for me, I think, for the majority.
Let's wrap by talking about Brighton 0, Wolves 0. From the kind of map, heat maps and also the momentum chart on SofaScore, it looks like Brighton dominated without creating
and could,
nearly
and could
enough.
Could have lost.
Yeah. Low XG in the game.
I mean, in terms of, I think Brighton possession was about 75%.
It was
it?
Very
staggering
high.
Staggering number.
Mm. 72 in the end.
Because Wolves are a good side. And Wolves had their own threat in the game. And actually, the longer it went on, and the more Brighton seemed to become a bit desperate, particularly after they changed to a back three later in the game. You felt there were chances for Wolves on the counter through Neto. And then Cunha had the one where he took such a heavy touch when Steele come out the goal. Jason Steele, but rather than Luke Steele, by the way, Jermaine Genius. He took such a heavy touch and probably would have won the game had he not. Brighton, do you know what is interesting though? I think you can do your narrative either way with Brighton. I really enjoyed the game. You know I enjoy watching them because the intricacies now they play and the way they manipulate and move you about and the way they play. And to be honest, I thought up until the penalty area they played really well, Brighton. But never really looked like they were going to score.
Yep.
You can't remember Saar making a save really in the second half or being overly extended beyond something that wasn't routinely comfortable. João Pedro particularly would have been one. If you sit in your FPL team, it would have done your head in last night. The amount of times he just took an extra touch rather than getting a shot away. And actually, I thought his all-round performance other than that was absolutely fine. I think Billy Gilmore played really well in midfield. Gross played really well. They look a little bit better defensively. I think like Van Heck is going to continue to play regularly at the moment. For those who are looking for an enabling defender, it might be one I consider as a kind of cover up for Estupinan, but not being able to afford Estupinan, i.e. because I'm thinking of other moves possibly. I think I don't want to say you're safe, but you should play the majority of the games, certainly until the Europe starts up again anyway. Which for Brighton's after game with 27. So you got a little bit of time on that.
Fairly decent run for them as well. I mean, they've got you away, which is a difficult fixture, but Luton Palace and then you, then Sheffield United, Everton, Fulham, Forest. That's a very good run. Like, if I'm coming off, say Trent wasn't available, if I need to move Trippier on and I don't want to go sideways to Livramento, Estupinan's like top of my list. There's potential defenders to go at. Still 5.1. And I think there could be some good points to be had in that run of 5-6 fixtures for sure.
And suddenly, 2-0-0s in a row for Brighton. Who
Madness.
Had that on the bingo card?
When you look at it and you say, do you know who was top on the BPS system for both teams? The goalkeepers, James. So I think that says a fair amount about the game that the goalkeepers were racking it up.
We have to, however, talk about the biggest refereeing scandal of the weekend last night. Take it, you know what that one is, Suj?
No.
Matthias Cunha getting booked for persistent fouling?
He got booked pretty early in the game.
He got booked for persistent offences. It was his first offence.
Yeah, I saw he got booked pretty early in the game. Pedro Neto back for Wolves.
Yeah, bonus, of course. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Basically played centre forward in the first half. And I think that was partly in terms of protecting him to go deeper into the game rather than having to track Brighton and their movement of their fullbacks or their two central midfield players. They left him to go and trusted others a little bit deeper. The ideal, obviously, would be Neto, Cunha, Huang longer term. Gary O'Neill has said they will try and get business done for a forward before the window shuts, but he did suggest it would probably be a loan. I wonder if Antonio's fitness might impact Danny Ings, because that's the name that keeps going around in circles about Wolves.
Danny Ings or Antonio? Because Antonio was mentioned with that in the summer quite a bit. There were a few links.
Danny Ings would be more the one, I think.
I only see him leaving West Ham if West Ham get a replacement in. There could be quite a daisy chain because we'd leave ourselves a little bit light. But
yeah, but sure, that if Kudos is back next week and stuff, yeah, then the requirement is not so big, is it? I know they're not direct comparisons, but then Kudos can play deeper, Bowen more comfortable through the middle. Because Bowen obviously ended up on the right late in the game for you at the weekend.
Look, we're not Fabrizio Romano's here, but clearly I know with the Calvin Phillips, for example, one of the issues is salary and how much he's going to cost on loan. Danny Ings is one of the highest earners at West Ham. They get him off the books. That means there's some money freed up. There is a lot of daisy chaining stuff where if this happens and this happens, if this happens and this happens. So, I don't see that as a...
Transfer window closes, I think, next Wednesday.
Yes.
Doesn't feel like it's opened.
Yeah, nothing's happened, does it?
To be honest, my team, Brighton have brought a young lad in. Obviously, Brentford have got Reguilón in, but it's been so quiet, hasn't it? Mm. We know why. Because a lot of clubs have gone, oh.
Yeah.
Basically.
Cool. Right, that's a wrap on the games, James. Do you want to tell everybody what they got to look forward to for the rest of this week? I'm going to pull up the internet, being Twitter, and see what questions we've got in.
Okay. Do recommend yesterday's COTC, which is obviously out and already available, Forest v Arsenal, with Mark Southerns and Adam Pritchard. We had a really detailed chat about Saka, as I said earlier on that pod. It also features, obviously, Mark's opinion on Forest and the potential points deduction. And his anger. I think anybody who listens to it or watches it will probably feel a bit sorry for him, actually. We'll also have another COTC Thursday. That's Wolves against Manchester United with Bradley Parker, Gary Robinson. Sky Fantasy Football tomorrow. I'll be streaming Friday, 12 o'clock. That's scheduled for our Patreon podcast this week. Q&A available from yesterday. Today, I got Money in Football with James Morrison. I recorded last night with him. He's a Hibernian fan, and we talk about Bournemouth's potential investment in Hibernian and how that feels, considering Hibernian really are a bigger football club than Bournemouth. We've got Tottenham tomorrow. Oof. Quiz on Thursday. The Bournemouth fans won't be offended by that, mate, because it's true.
At Planet FPL Pod, we'll have the differential show. Where you find him
on differential show on Friday as well.
Good, good, good. We've had a few questions in on the internet, Elon Musk's internet. FPO Invincible, if Chelsea win in the cup, does it make Arsenal players sell?
No. I mean, this is interesting, this. And it will play on people's minds, and it will even play on mine as well. So the question refers to, in the sense of, if Chelsea win in the cup, then obviously they're through to the fifth round. It decreases the possibility of Arsenal and Chelsea going ahead in game week 29. The next up bit of the question to that, though, is would a Chelsea get in the draw, right?
Yeah.
Well, if they get Manchester City away, then it's still probably going to be Arsenal and Chelsea in game week 29. If they get a low-ranking championship team at home in the fifth round, then it'll obviously be favourites to progress and it won't go ahead. But if we're looking now at a period of, say, 22 to 29, should we be defined by one game week? With, you know, do we look at, say, Gabriel? For those of us on Gabriel, let's say he's fit. We go, well, Arsenal are going to blank in 29. I need to start selling. No, that would probably be more one to think about later on. Saka is more definitive to me in relation to money rather than, oh, Arsenal might blank in game week 29, for example. And you must remember as well, if Arsenal do blank in game week 29, then there's a double to come later in the season if you've already used a wild card, for example. So it's also dependent on your chip strategy a little bit. It might be that some people want a wild card in game week 26, 27, for example. We might mention that as an idea next week. And in that case, yeah, sure, maybe you might want to move on. But let's remember that we've got really good fixtures. Don't be defined by your likes of Saka and Gabriel just because they'll have one less fixture in circa 2 months.
Right, FPL underscore Harry, probably a new listener around here. Which cup results?
I didn't know you were talking about it first. Hello, H.
Just an interesting
Can
one
I just
because
say, he dived in my DMs the other day and he asked me a double game week question. And I answered it and he didn't say nothing else. He just slid straight back out, the bastard. I saw you, H. Love you, mate.
Nah, of course it's love. Which cup result do you hope for, or results that will make a difference to who you're eyeing up? And I know, look, obviously we're going to record Monday, will be a chip special.
It's Tottenham winning Friday night. Yeah,
simple as that, right?
I'll be honest, I've said this before, when the cup games happen, and if you look on social media, be like, I want this because I want this to happen, and I just think you're so powerless. It's not even part of the game, hoping for external results, where quite often, say in the fifth round, I've spoken about this, there will be shocks in the fifth round of the cup. Do not be surprised if Tottenham beat Man City or vice versa and then they lose in the fifth round, because the way that with a midweek set of fixtures, there'll be more rotation in that round than there's been in other rounds. So don't be surprised if we get some shocks there. So thinking that far ahead and going, well, I want Chelsea to win this weekend because I want Arsenal and Chelsea to be off in 29, or because I need Ollie Watkins to have a fixture in 29. I'm bothered with that in my headspace, really, to be honest. So what do I want this weekend? I want Tottenham to win and I want as many of the big clubs to lose as possible, because it increases the probability of Tottenham winning the competition. Simple as that.
James Morrison, this is a quick one. Is Kudus a good option now, Garner probably going out? Well, let's wait till they're out.
Yeah.
Because we don't know. And the answer is simple,
You will know in the next couple of days.
Yeah. I think there's so many other variables with West Ham. Paqueta posted a video in the gym. Like, he was training and doing strength work. So I don't think he's... months, it's weeks, if anything, and there's a bit of time before the next games. Alvarez obviously failed a fitness test, so he might be fit. If those things all fall into place, sure, Kudus is a good option, but I wouldn't be moving early on it, for example. Definitely not.
Would you rather buy Kudus or Bowen if you were buying now? Let's just say Kudus is back. Price Kudus?
With Paqueta.
It's like a million saving, isn't it?
Yeah, with Paqueta.
Let's say not at the moment. Paquetá's probably not going to play against Bournemouth, fair?
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
Honestly, it'd probably be Kudus, because I'm well aware of wanting Salah and Haaland. And then you're looking at Sonny might come back and KDB. There's like so much other talent that I want to get in that million could make a difference. Again, it's down to squad value. Mine's a lot less than yours. So
you've got...
I'd probably do Kudus, to be honest with you.
After Bournemouth, you've got...
Arsenal,
and then Manchester United, or is it the other way around?
Arsenal first, I think. They've got Liverpool, then they play us. So we'd have...
Yes, you're right. We're going to Everton. So, yeah. No. It must be Arsenal 24. Yes, Arsenal play Liverpool 23. So you've got United away, then Arsenal at home. It's not kind of steam into territory, is it?
Absolutely not.
No, what's your 25 and 26?
I can tell you, James.
I feel like they're good fixtures.
Let's have a look here with Thomas Socek is the one I'm going to pick on. So Bournemouth at home, United away,
Arsenal at home,
Forest away,
okay,
Brentford at home,
yeah,
Everton away, Burnley at home.
Yeah, it's a good
and
run.
Then we get to Villa at home.
It's a good run. And also, in terms of we're saying, oh, maybe not diving now, but it kind of swings better in 25. Now, the chances are you're going to get to 25 and you're going to be thinking about a third City player, or maybe even like getting a Tony in, or a Liverpool player if they've got a double. And before you know it, it's gone and you've missed it. So in terms of consistency, I think if I was buying new now, if he's back, I'd be quite tempted by Kudus, I think.
Yeah, agreed. Two more questions, James. Not FPL related.
Oh,
FPL good. Knuckle says, what's your favourite Only Fools and Horses episode? There are so many. There are so many.
It's more like the moments, though, isn't
it? Yeah, that's it. Like Batman and Robin stands out.
That was the one I was thinking as the episode, but I still
the
think...
The chandelier.
The chandelier is the one, man.
The chandelier has to probably be, yeah, the funniest. I saw a little snippet with Nicholas Lyndhurst, because that was one of the very early episodes,
yeah.
And they said to him, right, we've only got one chandelier, and it's like £6,000 or something. If you laugh, you've fucked up the whole scene, and we can't re-record it. So when the other chandelier falls, you've got to keep a straight face. And he was like, God, how am I going to do that? And he was like, absolutely. Like, it was the hardest thing to do, was keep a straight face when the other chandelier fell. I think I'd give it to Chandelier. But I remember when he had to go to kids' club and pretend to be 13.
Oh, yes.
That
yes.
was wicked as well. There's
the,
so
the
many.
The falling through the bar.
Yeah, that's a classic with the Philo facts.
That, the falling through the bar is hysterical.
The Philo facts. Yeah. So it's the moments for sure, but if I had to pick one, I'm going to give it to Chandler.
I think for the episode, I think the Batman and Robin.
It's a good one as well.
Yeah.
Last but not least, FPL Calypso. Were you guys PlayStation or SNES? I was SNES, but none, because I didn't really care about consoles and gaming.
What's SNES?
Super Nintendo. There was Nintendo, then there was Super Nintendo, wasn't there? And then there was PlayStation.
I guess I was PlayStation.
Did you
I know I was a PS2 kid. Yeah.
I wasn't.
Before that, Mega Drive.
Right, so Sega. And then Sony PlayStation. I was a SNES guy, but yeah, neither. Did you have a Game Boy ever?
Yes.
Yeah, I had a Game Boy.
Yeah.
That was one of my first devices.
Yeah, same as that. Yeah, I remember playing the Game Boy in the back
Tetris
of the car as a kid.
And Mario
Tetris, yeah. I think it was the most incredible thing ever.
Yeah.
We'll look back at stuff now like FIFA and stuff and think it's shit in 20 years probably.
Indeed. Listeners, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Planet FPL. If you want to support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/planetfpl. We're trying to grow our Patreon numbers supporting the show. You get ad-free episodes if you don't want to listen to any advertising. You get access to our Slack community with nearly 1,000 engaged FPL managers and Sky managers and other sports in there as well. You get prize leagues. You get an extra podcast every single day if you're advanced.
James's here. Planet.
You get double the volume of content, an Excel spreadsheet that looks incredible and will help you plan out fixtures, doubles, all that kind of stuff.
I'm putting
all for a few quid a month
through pain on Talking Tactics this week. Each 20, obviously we play Man City in the fourth round of cup. Each 20 years since the incredible, probably worst night of my life, 4-3 defeat when we were 3-0 up against 10 men. I'm going to revisit it for Talking Tactics this week and laugh at Ginger Pele, Gary Doherty, and some car crash Tottenham defending.
Nice. So if you want all of that, patreon.com/planetfpl. If you don't, just say subscribed and hit the like button and notification bell wherever you're listening to the free content, because we'd love you to do that too.
5-star reviews as well for the audio listeners, because
yeah,
I always say
not?
That on my YouTube streams, but never on an actual audio podcast.
There we go. And we'll be back at you tomorrow. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Cue music, please. Manchild.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.